It is time now for our EAs and marketing panel discussion. It'll be my pleasure to moderate this discussion. First, I would like to introduce Carrie Vaughn. Carrie leads marketing and growth at the Center for Effective Altruism. He has a PhD in philosophy, where he specialized in applied ethics and value theory. Prior to working at CEA, Carrie ran technology and innovation at a $1.5 billion foundation and was also a professional poker player. Please welcome Carrie Vaughn. Next up is Rachel Atchison. She is the Animal Welfare Community Liaison at the New York City Mayor's Office, where she works on topics including banning wild animals in the circus, non-lethal deer management, and introducing food topics inside government. Previously, she earned a degree in philosophy and served as grassroots director for the farm animal advocacy group, the Humane League, in Philadelphia, where she focused on bringing Meatless Monday to the Philadelphia School District. Later, she created the Campus Outreach Department, which paid 50 students to conduct advocacy on their respective campuses. She has traveled around the country and spoken at dozens of universities to thousands of college students about the current state of animal agriculture. Please welcome Rachel Atchison. And finally, please join me in welcoming Matt Johnson. He is the CMO at GiveDirectly, where he oversees the organization's fundraising effort. He was previously CMO at Tough Mudder, where he grew annual sales from $20 million to $120 million, and VP of Marketing at Seamless.com, where he developed and launched the company's consumer service, resulting in over 1 million users and $200 million in annual sales within 5 years. Matt has a double bachelor's in marketing and entrepreneurship from Georgetown University. Please welcome Matt Johnson. All right, guys, so to start this off, and to give our audience some context for beyond the bios, who each of you are and what you do on a day-to-day basis and who you do it for, I thought it'd be great to just go down the panel and spend a couple minutes giving a sense for your role, your organization, who you think you are marketing to, and maybe a little bit about what you've learned, and then, of course, we can dive deeper into that.
Yeah, so I do marketing for CEA. You probably got several emails from me about this conference. And so my audience is the EA community, and that's what I focus on. One of the interesting things I've learned doing that is the EA community violates a bunch of standard marketing ideas. So one of the things that gets people to donate the most through EA Funds, our donation platform, is a very long essay that's black text on a white background that just explains all the arguments for doing it. And that converts way better than anything slick, anything with fancy buttons or what have you. So that's kind of my perspective and the thing I spend my time thinking about.
Rachel?
I do have a very good mic. This is great. So my name is Rachel Atchison. I'm the New York City Animal Welfare Liaison. I spent the previous last 5 years working directly for farm animals with the Humane League, volunteering with a lot of wonderful organizations that are present here, so groups like Animal Equality and the Humane Society of the United States as well. I have previously been marketing EA to largely the farm animal community, which is a community that is very nichely involved with effective altruism and yet is not common vernacular within the community. Now I market EA largely toward government employees, trying to get them to think more about effectiveness in their work.
I get directly. I've been there for a little bit, less than a year now. My background is actually in more like B2C for-profit organizations. I worked at a tech startup and then an entertainment company. And so for me, it's been a really exciting, challenging role to kind of bring the playbook that I learned in those organizations to a new sector, trying to apply it to more of a social impact role with GiveDirectly.
All right, awesome. So I think we've got kind of two of you who have described yourselves as working in what somebody earlier described as kind of a preaching to the choir mode a little bit more, right? Where you're less maybe focused on growth and more on engagement and buy-in or, you know, sort of commitment, let's say, among a community. Talk about that a little bit, because I do think that's quite different than where Matt is sitting, where he's maybe doing a little bit more of just kind of trying to convert people over to his organization's way of thinking in the first place.
From a farm animal perspective, farm animal advocacy kind of follows the three ideas of neglectedness, scale, and tractability. And so it's very easy to see why we as effective altruists should be looking more into the realm of farm animal advocacy. And when, but yet those two communities, farm animal advocacy and effective altruists, are largely different. There's a wonderful group of people here from the San Francisco vegetarian and vegan community.
I heard that cheer for you.
Yes, there's several people here today. But largely those communities are separate and don't know a ton about each other. And so it is getting people interested in the other community is actually fairly easy and fun, because when you are very passionate about farm animal advocacy, you can very easily move that over to being very passionate about effectiveness. Because we want to be doing the most effective things we can for animals.
I think describing what I do as preaching to the choir is kind of a nice framing. So what consistently seems to beat anything else is getting people who are interested in EA, who have that as a part of their identity, to like invite somebody else that they think would similarly find the community valuable. So for getting people to turn up to EA Global, the most powerful tactic is make it easy to refer a friend. And people do that, and other people show up. So I think that kind of like cause the most engaged people to continue to be engaged kind of approach is an approach that makes more sense for the EA community right now and for my work than like a broad-based outreach, try and cause everybody to have heard of this kind of approach, which was what I thought initially would be the right approach when I started marketing. But now it looks more like sort of preach to the choir is the right strategy.
So do you think that's a function of stage, or sort of how do you make that decision? And Matt, I want to come to you in a second also, because I think you guys are at a bit of a different stage, as we said. So how do you think about when or if ever that change would be made where you'd start to go from the choir to, you know, new converts, as it were?
I think it's a question of stage, but I also think it's a question of the difference between marketing an idea and marketing a product. So if you market a product, what you say in the marketing copy, how you explain the product, that doesn't change the product itself. It's, you know, if you're selling computers, it's a computer. It doesn't matter what you say about it, you still get the same thing. If you change how you market an idea, that can actually change the idea itself. So if you explain effective altruism as being only about randomized controlled trials that show which global poverty charities are best, that's what the idea becomes as you market it that way. And so part of it's that sort of unique thing about marketing ideas, where if you transmit an idea that's different than the actual thing you think is important, it's a lot easier for that to go wrong. And so I think it's more about sort of avoiding those risks that are unique to marketing ideas and less about stage or sort of other considerations.
So Matt, tell us about how you segment the world, because it is a bit different, and I'm struck also that it may be a function not only of stage, but also of the sort of relative complexity, or in your case, I would think, simplicity of the idea that you're trying to get people to consider.
Yeah, I think that's right. So I sort of think about it as concentric circles kind of building out from a core. So to me, a lot of the people that are in the room today that consider themselves a part of the EA community, I think are sort of our core. And the way that we've traditionally sort of messaged our product, I think, speaks very well to that audience. It's very data driven. It's very evidence based. I think that our brand positioning at GiveDirectly is just highly aligned with this community, which is terrific. This is a really exciting community to be a part of. And then it's interesting because I, you know, on other panels that I've been listening to today, and all of EA is a little bit new to me. I've been working in the space for a little bit less than a year now, and it's been interesting to hear so many people talking about what is to me a bit of a jump out from that core and talking about how people should be giving up their lattes, and that instead of doing that, they can save lives. And I think objectively that makes a lot of sense to me, but I think as a messaging tactic, I'm skeptical of it. I think it's potentially, you know, sort of patronizing, and it's just a difficult argument to make. And so for me, like, kind of that's the third ring, and there's a middle way, but, you know, until you're trying to, or before you're trying to sort of convert people who
don't give to charity right now, to start thinking about, hey, I should give to charity, and maybe effective altruism charities like GiveDirectly are the right vehicle through which I sort of start doing that. I think there's a huge market of people who, and organizations, people, governments that are giving money to charity right now, but just giving it to what I think a lot of us here think are less effective charities than EA charities. And so for me, you know, we do a lot of marketing to the core, and then we're now starting to explore what it means to market to the next concentric circle outside of that, which is, you know, in our world, the poverty intervention world, it's a $130 billion a year market. We're doing about $50 million of revenue right now, so there's a huge pond there to go fishing in and try to find more dollars from organizations, individuals, whoever, who are giving to other interventions, other charities who are trying to do poverty work. And we think that that money could go, you know, through our model to recipients in a more effective way. So that's how I kind of bucket out in those three groups. There's the core, there's people who are already giving to charity, and then there are people who are not giving to charity right now. And I think the third group is just a difficult one to convert. And like one data point on this is that 2% of GDP every year is given to charities, and that hasn't actually changed for like four decades. So I was doing some research into this recently, and it like since 1975, like every year, it's like it sometimes variates to like 1.9 or 2.1, but it's incredible to me that it just sticks on 2% of US GDP every year is given to charities. And what that tells me is that like the trying to increase the size of the pie and trying to convince people who don't give to charities right now is just like a very difficult argument to make. And so just when you think about target audiences, I would focus mostly on people who are already giving or organizations who are already giving and try to pull them into this community as opposed to what they've done traditionally.
I think that's interesting, and I would love to kind of push you a little bit more to just tell us like what have you found is working best to get those people to understand to, you know, that they can have a better impact if they will change their behavior?
Yeah. It's a tough question. I mean, I've been doing this for less than a year. I think we're still very much in the phase of kind of experimenting and throwing lots of things up on the wall and seeing what sticks. One of the other things I've been learning lately by doing some strategic research is that for most organizations that get to $50 million, $100 million of revenue, they kind of specialize in one thing. They become very, very good at one thing and then just scale that. We don't really do that. It's sort of interesting. We do a little bit of everything. We have corporate partners, we have foundation partners, we work with governments, we do a lot with media, content marketing. We're sort of still trying to do everything at the same time. I think that eventually we're going to have to sort of trim some of that down and focus a little bit more specifically. But the truth is that to date, like, we've had some success across just about every channel we've tried to jump into. I think the government one and sort of working with multinational organizations is one where we haven't had like super tangible results yet, but we're seeing a lot of progress, and we just know that we need to have a lot of patience in that world and wait for, you know, these organizations to sort of come around to understanding what we do. So as far as like the how-to goes, that like this works but that doesn't, I think we're still learning. And I mean, I could get into more tactical specific stuff, but for now, at least across like big marketing themes, we're still, I think, experimenting and trying a little bit of everything to see where we have success and where we have less success.
In a sense, that may be a sign of a truly great idea, that it sort of seems to work with a very wide variety of audiences.
There's no question that my job is made a lot easier, perhaps because our model is very buzzy. It's easy to talk about. It makes for a great headline. You know, we get a lot of media just around the idea of like, hey, giving free cash to people, and like whether that takes the form factor of a lump sum payment, or we're now doing a lot with basic income and things like that. Soon we'll be doing work with like refugees. And so whenever you talk about giving free cash to folks, the media, I think, kind of picks up on that. And that does make a lot of things for me much easier.
Rachel, I want to go to some of your earlier experience. You said that these days you're kind of more focused on people who are already engaged with the message, but I can't imagine much that I would think would be more difficult from a marketing perspective than trying to change what kids eat for lunch in schools. And that's certainly an audience, you know, that was not thinking about your message before you showed up. I don't know if you guys could hear backstage, but Spencer Greenberg was just on stage and told us that overwhelmingly 99% of a survey that he did believe that animals feel pain. So there is some sort of common ground, it seems, with the population. But what has your experience been like when you have tried to reach out to that third circle of people who are not engaged at all with your message?
So thankfully, I have a very catch-all title. I'm the animal welfare liaison. So that includes everything from small casework, like I was working with an NYPD detective to apprehend someone who had stolen a bunny from the animal shelter, up to policy work. So I'm working on a proposal around decreasing the amount of dog bites in New York City. And so by working on animal welfare broadly, I'm able to very much pull people's heartstrings that they already know, that they already have a relationship with. I work on animals, and people know me as that animal person, and for the most part, everyone loves animals. I have the easiest job in many ways, because marketing animals, when you have the imagery of a puppy or a kitten, is very, very simple. And so when I bring in that third layer of, well, let's expand our circle of compassion to include farm animals, then what does that look like in a city setting? Well, that looks like, what do we have on our plate? It does get a little tricky. The good news is there are so many other reasons to be thinking about what we have on our plate. So it's not just animals, but it's the environment. Number one cause of global warming is animal agriculture. It's plant-based diets used as preventative medicine. So how do we reverse type 2 diabetes and obesity, heart disease? We can address these issues using plant-based diets, using the lens of looking at animal agriculture. And so it's not as if I am pushing a lot of the ideas of food around animals. Instead, I'm marketing to the respective parties. So if I have someone who is very interested in public health, then I'm going to be bringing up the fact that this is a public health concern. It just also happens to be a farm animal concern, and you can get a lot of things done by looking at it from a holistic lens.
One thing that I heard you say there that I wanted to give each of you guys a chance to talk about a little bit was just the concept of images or sort of, you know, emotional appeals. I forget who it was earlier today, but somebody said that, you know, it would be great if we were all as emotionally engaged with statistics as we are with stories, but that's just not who we are as people. Stories just work much better. So, Carrie, I don't know if that's been your experience, but I'd love to hear kind of from each of you a little bit more on storytelling as it fits into your marketing work.
Yeah, so that hasn't been my experience, which is interesting, because that's kind of what you'd expect at the outset. And actually, an experience that I have, which is maybe different than the one Matt has, is I haven't found that outreach to people already donating money is particularly effective in the EA community. In fact, it's almost easier to talk about EA to somebody who's like scientific or mathematically inclined and just sort of give them the arguments for why this is an effective thing to do. And then that seems much more likely to cause a sort of flip from, I don't care about charity at all, to like, this is an important part of my identity. And I think that's because when you're already donating, EA is not a very nice message to hear, because in a lot of cases, it's going to say the thing you were donating to wasn't worth giving to, and people don't like to hear that. So it's a lot easier to talk to people who haven't already thought about charity, but have the sort of mathematical background to sort of get the arguments. And then the other thing that I found is emotional appeals don't really seem to work. Like I said, the best copy for getting somebody to donate to EA Font is a like 5 to 10 page article that I wrote about all the arguments for why you should do it. And that works really well. And so I think that's just that EA is attracting a particular kind of person who violates a bunch of the existing marketing stereotypes and sort of marketing wisdom. And you have to kind of adapt what you do on the basis of how that audience is different. It's also, I think, just the thing that is a differentiator about EA from any of 1,000 other charities you've heard of or ads you've seen is that we seem to care about the reasons and the arguments and the numbers in a way that people usually don't. So that's kind of a way to break through the noise, which is why I think it works in our case.
Rachel, before you answer, I would just say now is also a great time to submit questions through the Bizibo app or at sf.eaglobal.org/polls, and I'll do my best to check questions as they come in and surface them. So, Rachel, go ahead.
So in terms of images being important, who here, question for the audience, who here has seen the Animal Equality virtual reality? Raise your hands if you have. Okay. So that's a pretty significant group. I'd say probably 50% of you have. By this time tomorrow, I hope the rest of you do. Those images are very useful for getting at kind of our emotional appeal. And yet, at the same time, coupled with the information that the scale of the problem, I think, makes a kind of perfect marketing of a cause. And Animal Equality has done very, very well at that with their virtual reality technology. So I think using images for the farm animal space has been great and has really propelled us forward. Using images in the effective altruism space is definitely harder. I have a Twitter account that I try and promote as much around effective altruism as I can, very sparingly, because that is my marketing strategy on my Twitter platform in general. But it has been harder to market effective altruism when we have less of a clickbait and less of a, less of that presents problem.
I think our situation is a little bit different. I think for people to want to give cash to somebody living in extreme poverty, there's a level of trust there that is required. And I think a lot of people who you first introduced to the idea of giving away money, they're very skeptical of it. They sort of, I think, lean on what I have now come to understand to be misperceptions or stereotypes of poor people, that they're going to waste the money, that they're going to spend it on vices like alcohol or cigarettes or what have you. And I think for us, like, teaching donors that these recipients are actually like amazing people that want to use every single penny that they're given for a really, you know, like a positive thing in their life is a huge part of us sort of converting people to understanding what is otherwise kind of a counterintuitive idea. And so for us, like, putting our recipients out front and like the imagery of that and their stories is a huge part of, I think, converting people to understanding why giving cash as opposed to giving goats or grain or anything else is the right type of intervention for people living in extreme poverty. So, you know, like, we have a new tool on our website that we launched in October of last year called GD Live, where you can go on there and there's this like live feed, sort of like a social media feed of all of the people who are recipients of ours who have opted in to tell their stories on our platform. So because we're sending money to cell phones, we can then call people after each time that they receive a payment, and we can ask them a few questions about how their lives have been impacted by the generosity of our donors, get those answers and kind of put them into this feed, which is really interesting. And it's totally uncurated, unedited. You can go on there and like search for, you know, anything that these people say that they're doing with the money. We'll post it, you know, live there on the site. So it's totally transparent, which I think is important insofar as like staying aligned with EA values of sort of like authenticity and transparency. But I think so I think that this tool is like this sort of interesting experiment to kind of lean into the idea of like, you know, supplementing the data and the evidence with more human stories when and where you can. So people can go on there, they can follow these folks. They then receive emails when people receive another payment saying like, hey, this is how this person's life changed because of this latest payment. So I think we're still in the early days of seeing the impact of a tool like that and like how deeply our core audience or any kind of future audience wants to engage with that kind of content. But we're really bullish on experimenting with that and trying to make the story of our recipients more at the forefront of our marketing messages. So, yeah, I think for us, like, we're trying to do a bit of both, like kind of maintain the data-driven, evidence-based stuff that kind of has worked for us in the past, but then layer on top of that human stories, which I think we all intuitively understand why those sort of appeal to another segment of society.
One piece of anecdotal data that just came in through the poll app is from someone in the audience who says they're a longtime GiveDirectly donor and loves the new feed of content and was just about to ask you about that.
Thank you.
You mentioned transparency, and that's a word not often you know, that immediately comes to mind when one thinks of marketing. I have a background in marketing, helping local businesses market themselves. It's a lot of, you know, what's called puffery in the space of, you know, we're the best at this, or you can't find better, you know, pasta in town or what have you. And in my world, nobody really questions whether that's factually true or not. It's sort of seen as acceptable or just normal, commonplace practice in marketing to say things that are not exactly true, but, you know, you get the point. I think that's quite different for you, Carrie. Certainly,
yeah,
I have a sense of that.
That's not true in my world.
But I'd love to hear kind of all of you guys maybe comment on the tension between that sort of, you know, great marketing copy and, you know, the commitment that your community may have to more literal, factual statements.
Yeah, so the sort of great thing and the tough thing about marketing to a community is if I do something that people don't like, they'll definitely tell me about it. I'll definitely get emails from people saying, you should have done this, or I don't like that. I think one of the things that's hard for me doing marketing is I can easily A/B test which email gets the most clicks. But saying something which is misleading, even something which is technically true but gives you like an impression that isn't exactly right, has long-term costs that are really hard to find and to see. So it makes people trust you less. It means that they trust other information, you give them a little less, and so on. And so the thing that I'm always trying to do is sort of weigh the sort of data-driven, you know, here's what works approach against the, yeah, but there might be long-term downsides to doing something which isn't exactly accurate. Also, fortunately, the thing I found is just like say the things that you think are true, and that tends to work better even if you only care about marketing, at least with this community.
Can you elaborate a little bit more?
Well, I'm not sure what your... I mean, you have seemingly a number of different audiences, as you said. You know, I think there's a spectrum probably of kind of the restaurant going public on the one hand that doesn't get too up in arms when somebody claims to have the best pizza. And then there's the EA core community, you know, the people that are here today who have a very strong commitment to factual accuracy, transparency, and ultimately truth, I think, is really what people care about most. Maybe just to start, I mean, for the different audiences that you work with, how do you see them falling on that spectrum? Do you see them sort of caring a lot about everything you say being perfectly true, or can you sort of work more with marketing copy like your old, you know, Mad Men inspirations might have done in the past?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of an example where the copy hasn't been run through 1,000 lawyers, and I'm coming up blank. Working within
that's
city
a whole
government,
different set of constraints.
It's a whole yes, exactly.
Yeah, I would say we actually have a very similar situation at GiveDirectly, and it's been fascinating for me coming from the for-profit world and working in the B2C space for so many years and being able to kind of write my own marketing copy and know that it was punchy and exciting and good and maybe traded in hyperbole and exaggeration a little bit, but I knew it was going to land. And since I started working GiveDirectly, I've had to completely unlearn all of those habits and almost, you know, my first instinct on anything from a messaging perspective was to say like, okay, what would I have done in a previous life? Now let's do the exact opposite. And let's just be completely cold and factual and objective in the way that I'm talking about what we're doing. And it's actually great. Like, it's completely liberating as a communicator to just be able to just tell it like it is, not feel like I have to put any spin on things. So I don't know if there was just like this latent thing in me that like wanted to communicate this way. And now I'm just excited that I finally get to tap into that. But like, I've really, really enjoyed speaking in the way that this community speaks with each other. And I think, you know, look, GiveDirectly had a brand positioning long before I got there that was, you know, militant about being super factual about everything and being extremely objective. And I sort of see my role as just continuing that.
Something very interesting about the kind of trade-offs that we're hearing between, you know, punchier copy that may sort of get the emails opened more and may get more clicks, but then sort of have, you know, an eroding effect in terms of overall community trust. There seems to be sort of a profound lesson there. In flying, they say you want to always have both the instruments and sort of an eye on the horizon. And if you're only working with one at any given time, like, that's when you can really start to get into trouble. I wonder if you think of, I mean, maybe you could give some sort of examples of that, or, you know, a little bit more intuition for the trade-offs that you face. But then also wondering, as you think about just kind of doing good in the world more broadly, is there a lesson to be sort of abstracted up from our marketing efforts to say, you know, we can't always follow the data immediately because sometimes it doesn't really think about the long run as much.
Yeah, so I think this also kind of parallels the sort of using emotional appeals or images in your marketing question. I think you can be misleading, you can use emotional appeals to get people to do a single thing now, but if you want people to do a big thing over the course of their lives, I think arguments are just way more powerful for doing that. I think it's reasonably hard to change somebody's general outlook on life or what, you know, sort of how they're orienting their life with images, even really good ones. So I think it just turns out to be better to focus a bit on the long run. In terms of the kinds of trade-offs that I think about, we have a buzzword at CA, which we call fractal clarity. So a fractal is the same at whatever level of analysis you look at it. And we want the copy to give you a clear, accurate sense of what we're trying to communicate at whatever level you read it at. So if you just read the headline, if you skim it, if you read it in detail, if you read it in detail in all the footnotes. So the kinds of trade-offs I think about is, turns out that the subject line, EA Global applications are now open, tests better than EA Global applications are open. But now open gives you a sense that they just opened when they opened months ago. And so that violates fractal clarity. That doesn't give you a clear, accurate sense of what's actually going on, and that's slightly misleading. So that's the kind of trade-offs that I find myself making in sort of day-to-day operations.
Anything to add? Okay. One thing that I think this audience might find useful, I think there's a lot of people here who are in kind of moments of transition. They're maybe open to new opportunities right now in their own careers and their own efforts to make an impact on the world, or they are starting an organization and they're trying to figure out how to kind of gain traction with it and how to tell their stories. What do you think is maybe some advice you could give in terms of kind of elevator pitch or sort of condensing that message down to something that is powerful but still retaining, ideally, fractal clarity?
For marketing pitch for EA?
Well, that actually was one of the questions, is how would you do that for EA? But then maybe also some advice to people who are doing kind of specific projects within the broader sphere of EA that they want to be able to meet someone in the atrium and say, hey, here's what I do, and make that stick.
Yeah. So I don't have a good answer to this, but I can give something quickly. So I wouldn't try and make an indiscriminate elevator pitch. I think basically the goal is figure out how the other person understands the world, and then figure out how to communicate your thing in the way that will best connect with how they think the world works, or their understanding. So I think in general, sort of indiscriminate pitching doesn't seem to work, and you need to kind of understand the person you're talking to in a lot of detail to have what you care about make sense. But if other people have sort of more elevator pitchy approaches, I'd be interested in hearing it.
Yeah, I do think us as EAs reading more books like How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, I think that that is a good way for us to learn how to better market EA. Overall, you know, being things like being more approachable, more friendly, those are just kind of those common sense ideas around marketing EA that we need to be doing more of as a community.
Yeah, so I think maybe one simple way to think about that, if you're in the position that we're talking about, is I think a lot of people want to talk about what they're doing or maybe even how it works. But from a storytelling perspective, I think talking about why you're doing what you're doing is a really powerful lens through which to try to communicate. So building a story, a genesis story for your thing that you're trying to get started around, like why you care about it, why you're doing it, and why it's going to make an impact, I think is a good way to think about it.
I'm just finally getting a whole bunch of questions to load here, so scanning through them. One that I think might be interesting is, what are the biggest mistakes that each of you have made in EA marketing? Somebody wants to learn from your mistakes rather than having to repeat them.
I will jump in as what mistakes. So I'm a part of the Washington, I was a part of the Washington, D.C. Effective Altruism group. We had meetups very similar to every other city. We had meetups a couple times a month. And I think one way that we failed initially is having a lot of those meetups just be in individual people's houses. And that was not the most conducive for new people coming out to events. That was something that we now try and alternate. We try and we had tried to kind of go back and forth. That was the glaring thing that came to mind. I'll jump back in again.
Yeah, so I think one mistake that I made early in my tenure was sort of a sequencing mistake of prioritizing what I would call acquisition ideas or programs versus retention stuff. So I think for us, there's still a lot of meat on the bone with just trying to reach more people who are similar in profile to the people in the room right now, and trying to do that through engagement programs like ambassador programs and campaign fundraising and that kind of stuff to allow people who want to evangelize for effective altruism or forgive directly to go out and talk to their networks and evangelize on our behalf from a very trusted and authentic and credible place, I think is a great thing to be doing right now at this stage of our evolution. And I think when I first started, I wanted, like, just, I think in part because of my background and because I saw that we hadn't done it before and I felt like there was a huge opportunity there, I wanted to just kind of jump into acquisition marketing and think about whether it was paid advertising or whatever it was, just try to reach a much wider audience much more quickly, which was a play that I had run myself a couple of times and seen, you know, very successful in the tech startup space, et cetera. And I think to convince people to sort of latch on to these counterintuitive ideas like giving cash to poor people, I think it has to come from a place of like real credibility, whether that's from a friend or from the media, like a trusted type of media. And so just the sequencing of things to kind of prioritize the engagement stuff first, the retention stuff first, and then there will come a time at some point in Give Directly's evolution, every other organization's evolution, where you do have to shift into doing a little bit more acquisition marketing to continue to try to grow and reach a wider audience. But I think being thoughtful about the sequencing of those things is important.
I think the category of mistake that I've made the most often is thinking that EA isn't going to be as weird as it seems to be from a marketing perspective. So I kept thinking probably something flashy is going to work. Probably you need to really sell things. And after, I mean, a year plus maybe, I sort of started to realize, no, if I just like write stuff about why you should do an EA thing the way I would write a philosophy paper, that's actually going to work way better. And so sort of being a little bit slow to go, no, this is actually a community who wants to be talked to the exact way I want to be talked to was kind of the mistake that I kept making.
Interesting. Going back to your comments for a second, we were talking beforehand, you made an interesting distinction that may be novel for some people between marketing and advertising, and maybe you can unpack that for us a little bit. But I also wanted to ask each of you, this is a question from the audience, what are the KPIs that you look at? Typically marketing, you know, certainly in the startup space or in just the kind of for-profit space in general, you've got, you know, ideally clear metrics that you're going after, and new users and, you know, new customers, and how many times did the cash register ring. Are you guys able to boil your efforts down to highly quantitative things, even though that may not be the perfect measure long-term, and you keep that in mind? Are there barometers that you can watch day in and day out?
Yeah, I think there definitely are. I think that they're different by sort of channel segment for us. So when we talk about retail donors who are giving smaller amounts, the KPIs for that group are going to be very, very different than the KPIs for going and trying to engage governments or multinational organizations to give to us.
And for our audience who don't know what KPIs are?
Yeah, it's a key performance indicator.
There we go.
Or I've heard OKR also used. We actually use OKR at Give Directly, but I've used KPI in a previous life. So, yeah, just basically metrics to measure performance. On, you know, it's pretty straightforward stuff on the retail marketing side. It's dollars. There's secondary stuff around just like website traffic, conversion, emails that you're gathering, number of donors. I mean, things that are pretty intuitive, I would say. I'm happy to kind of unpack each one of them if that's helpful. I get the sense that this room of people is fairly comfortable with kind of the basics. And then, yeah, I guess on the partnership side, it's a bit more of like a pipeline sales strategy for us, where we talk about different stages of a funnel, you know, top of the funnel, creating new leads, and then kind of pushing people down towards engaging with us more deeply, negotiating, and then converting, whether that be a foundation or a corporate partner or a high net worth individual, whatever it is. It's a bit more like sales. So the KPIs in that world are a little bit different, but I mean, when you look through our kind of like monthly reporting that we do across our executive team and out to our board, like we definitely segment it out between the retail piece and the partnerships piece, because they're very, very different.
The city has an entire office devoted to KPIs, our mayor's office of operations. So we are incredibly metrics oriented. We have a metric for about every program we do.
So I find KPIs in general to be more difficult in EA than would be nice. So mostly we end up having KPIs for specific projects or that are based on specific theories that we're trying to test or things that we're trying to do. So for EA Global, like the KPI is people that show up for the most part, but you know, with some sort of how engaged they are rating, or with some ideas about what kind of mix of people we'd like to have attend. But for sort of the work of EA movement building in general, figuring out what the KPI should be, I think is a hard and interesting question. And if you have thoughts on what it should be, definitely come talk to me about it.
We are almost out of time, but a couple of last interesting questions came in that I want to get your guys' take on. One, very practically, how can somebody prepare for a career in marketing within the EA space? What skills would you recommend? Any ideas about where or how to go about getting those skills? Anything else you would add?
This will be a more specific answer. So the things that I've done that have given me the most return per hour of input was, one, getting a sense of what's possible. So we use a tool called Zapier to connect most of our services together, and it basically connects other programs to other programs you're using. And I just sort of read through every single thing that connected to that, because those are tools that I could easily use if I have a problem. And I frequently find myself going, oh, I have a problem. I remember a thing I read about 6 months ago that's designed to solve exactly that problem. And that turns out to be extremely helpful. And then there's a service called Upwork where you can hire freelancers to do specific projects. That's like a superpower if you're good at that. You can just have people doing a bunch of things that would take you a lot of time to do. So those are like very specific things that I've gotten a good return on.
I'll turn it to you.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I don't know if there's a silver bullet playbook on how to become good at marketing. It's, you know, there's an art to it. There's a science to it. You can sort of choose to specialize in one of those two. You can do both. I think one thing that's been interesting for me is, because the communications and messaging in this world, in this sector, is so, it's so detailed, it's so objective, I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, the people that I work with within GiveDirectly who do a lot of our writing are people who may work in the field, people who have PhDs, people who don't really have a communications background. They don't have, like, a marketing background, and that doesn't really hold them back at all from being able to contribute greatly to the content that we're producing. Like, we do a lot of just kind of taking pretty dense, you know, analytical stuff from the field and then just sharing it with our audience, and that's great content for us. And so I think, you know, in a lot of other organizations, I think people want to hire folks who have traditional PR backgrounds or traditional marketing communications backgrounds. And in this sector, I think just having like deep domain expertise with the subject material is actually what allows you to speak about it with credibility. And I think, I don't know, it's just sort of interesting to me that that's true.
Try the handheld.
For those folks who are not exactly looking to get into marketing as a career, but are looking to market EA more generally, I do think that we as a community need to become a little bit more approachable about some of these issues, and in some ways not take ourselves so seriously. I know that we are a community dedicated to maximizing impact, but that can come at a cost when we appear a certain way to the other side. So when marketing EA, I just urge everyone to become as approachable as possible. We're all trying to make the world a better place, and that is an incredibly applaudable effort that I think can be easily translated.
So I think great jumping off point for what I think unfortunately will have to be our last question, which is, have you ever done anything or considered doing anything, or would you consider doing things that are sort of provocative or attention-grabbing or just funny or kind of otherwise outside the, you know, what might be called the informational theory of marketing of, like, if we just give people the information, then they can make their own choices. Carrie, I suspect I know what you'll say, but you might surprise me.
I think funny might be okay, but I wouldn't do the other things. And that's because I think reputation is really important, especially if you want to build a large, thriving community that'll last long into the future. And doing things that are provocative, I think, can have these long-term negative effects that you don't appreciate. So, like, one seemingly very mild example that still has negative dividends now is the initial conversation around earning to give and what it meant. I think the ADK folks had correctly realized that they had a really compelling story, which is these people are going to work on Wall Street, make a bunch of money, and use that to help improve the world. That's super interesting. But even today, years later, people are still very confused about what earning to give is, and they think EA is the finance people who are donating money. And so I think that just paid this negative cost over time that was really hard to see at the outset. So I think you should just be very risk-averse about not just presenting the message in as much nuance as you can reasonably communicate it.
Sorry, I forgot the question.
Provocative, funny, attention-grabbing.
Yes. It's really interesting. I think going back to even when I was interviewing to work at GiveDirectly, it was something that we were talking a lot about, was the idea that we could create some attention by choosing a nemesis within the sector, trying to create some controversy, try to pick a fight, so to speak, and to talk about how ineffective or inefficient other things were versus our model, which we think is extremely elegant. I think every time we've talked about it, we've ended up kind of walking back from the ledge a little bit. I think I agree with Carrie's comments that I think it's a little bit of a race to the bottom around pushing a negative narrative like that and sort of doing the mudslinging thing, which I think damages relationships over time and sort of puts you in a very difficult position to build a positive inspirational movement for the long term. I think it probably does have short-term benefits in terms of just creating attention and controversy creates drama and eyeballs, but I think that the risks are real around kind of taking that as a messaging strategy, and so we've consistently sort of like shied away from it.
I think that's a good cautionary note for our audience. We'll have to leave it there. Carrie Vaughn, Rachel Acheson, and Matt Johnson, thank you so much for a great discussion.